My smile lasts all the way to school. I teach with conviction. I move more spryly than usual between the desks. I speak louder. I'm more immersed, more involved, more patient, too. Even my accent seems more fluid and my writing straighter on the whiteboard. In my classroom, the air seems more robust, the oxygen more nourishing. During break, my husband tries to call me. I don't pick up on his first two tries. Once again, it's hard, but that's the rule. I call him back 5 minutes later and we talk about my faculty meeting tonight at school. I remind him that he needs to bring the kids to the conservatory later. My good mood is written all over my face. People tell me that I'm glowing, and I get compliments on my skirt. I eat with a coworker I like. We speak about our students, interesting. Our husbands, my favorite part. Our children, immediately less interesting. My husband's nocturnal declaration of love explains my joy. But the large smile that's been on my face since this morning is also because it's Thursday. Thursday is like a second Monday. It's a new beginning, the end of intermission, the swimmer kicking the pool wall to flip and head back in the other direction, the picnic halfway through the hike. Then, at one, I'm invaded by doubt, a devastating, hyperbolic doubt. What actually happened last night? Did my husband really say those words, or did I dream them? But I remember it so perfectly. I love you. I love you so much. I love you. I love you, then I love you so much, then once again, I love you. I can still distinctly hear his voice. He didn't say it once, but three times. I couldn't be mistaken three times over. I couldn't have dreamed for so long. Sweep me off my feet, please. Sweep me off my feet now. In class, we're working on a translation. The most stimulating exercise. Try by any means possible to translate the untranslatable when the exact equivalent doesn't exist in French and we have to cobble something together. Sweep me off my feet. If we translate word for word, we come up with balais-moi de mes pieds, but that doesn't mean anything. It's more like renverse-moi, bowl me over. But then we lose the idea of the feet and being anchored to the ground. Another possibility, fais-moi perdre pied, make me lose my footing. But now we lose the idea of the gesture and the fall. Impossible to get everything in a single phrase. Sweep me off my feet, bouscule-moi, knock me over. Fais-moi perdre l'équilibre et tomber, make me lose my balance and fall down. Décroche-moi du sol. Detach me from the ground. Déracine-moi, uproot me. Fais basculer ce qui me faisait encore tenir debout. Topple what is keeping me standing. Pousse-moi, je veux dégringoler et assister à ma propre chute. Push me, I want to plummet and witness my own fall. It's a demand, uttered in the imperative. Sweep me off my feet, please. Make me fall in love with you, please. Sweep me off my feet now. Make me fall in love with you now. This phrase describes the instant that precedes the encounter, just before the plummeting, when we summon love. Because you never meet the love of your life out of nowhere, as unexpected as it might seem. We must be, even unconsciously, prepared to meet someone. It's that state of impatience that my students and I debate. I purposely choose texts about love or existential dilemmas because the debates that arise with my students feed my inner life. Between 15 and 18 years old, emotions are heightened. It's the age when you first fall passionately in love. So my students know very well what it's all about, surely better than their parents. This way, I guarantee a certain number of profound conversations during my week. Everywhere else, I feel like I speak only about logistics and practicalities. Vacation, interior decoration, meal choices, private or public school. Adult conversations typically revolve around domestic concerns more than metaphysical ones. Sweep me off my feet, please. Sweep me off my feet now. I didn't choose these lyrics at random. My husband and I met while this song was playing. I had begrudgingly agreed to go with a friend to see an English band I'd never heard of. The music was super loud and we had a hard time hearing each other, but when a stranger leaned toward me to tell me his name, I immediately fell in love with him. His first name seemed to be a good omen, full of promise and reassuring at the same time. The first name of a lover, of a husband. What came next proved me right. The way we met was so wonderful that sometimes I feel like it's the real story, and our relationship merely an endless footnote. As we spoke our first words, the idea that there was once a world in which my husband and I had only ever exchanged 10 words makes me dizzy. How many are we at now? The singer repeated over his guitar riffs those words that I've never forgotten. Sweep me off my feet, please. Sweep me off my feet now. That night, my husband was with one of his friends. I think often about that man who was lucky enough to witness our first encounter. I so wish I could watch the scene from his point of view. Could he already anticipate the importance that night would come to have in our lives? Can you tell from the outside when something is a casual fling versus when something is destined to upend an entire existence? Was the air around us charged with electricity, ready to react to the slightest spark? That man died in a car accident the following year, so I was never able to ask for his version of events. A part of the narrative of our origins, an essential aspect of our romantic cosmogony, was stolen from me. His death might explain certain issues I've had with my husband since. How can we know where we're going if we don't know where we're coming from? So to make up for it, every year I study those song lyrics with my students, and I continue to try to pierce the mystery that surrounds any first encounter. I finished the translation of the exchange of vows my class began on Monday. The I do becomes je le veux, which still produces the same effect, although I notice that the girls are more receptive to it than the boys. It's a beautiful declaration of love. The woman seems very in love with her husband, one of my students comments. I'm glad I kept the vows I wrote 13 years ago for my husband. It's a good translation exercise for my students, a chance to review the use of the auxiliary. I wasn't able to recite my vows on the day of our wedding after months of writing and research. I had consulted some 50 articles, read dozens of books on the subject, watched countless romantic comedies, filled a thick notebook with all my research and drafts. It would have been a waste not to do anything with them. I transformed a romantic failure into a pedagogical success. Who says I don't know how to bounce back? The more an educator is personally invested in the contents of their course, the better their teaching. My husband and I were married in a chateau in the middle of a vineyard. It was the wedding I had always dreamed of as a young girl. Hundreds of guests, my blonde hair in an elegant bun, a sumptuous dress that spun with each of my movements, tables illuminated in the night with lanterns of all colors. Of course, I had some apprehension. My working-class parents sat at the same table as my husband's bourgeois parents. But in the end, if my in-laws didn't enjoy themselves, they hid it well. Enamored with the Anglo-Saxon universe, I insisted that there be an exchange of vows, including a speech, handwritten by my husband, in which he would explain why he was so happy to be marrying me. I even imagined that we would frame our 2 texts and hang them in our bedroom after. I couldn't fathom the idea of my husband not publicly expressing his love. By nature an introvert, he never waxed poetic about his passion for me. So what was the good in having a wedding if it wasn't an opportunity to receive a declaration of love from my husband? I sensed even then that I would need it to comfort me during the nights of doubt to come. I spent weeks pushing for it with my future husband, then with my in-laws. The 4 pillars of Catholic marriage and vows in front of the priest held little value for me. I agreed to perform those rituals, but they have nothing to do with love, passion, commitment. I wanted an exchange of vows like in American movies. My mother-in-law was surprised. It wasn't traditional, but she pretended to hear me out so as not to hurt my feelings. I explained that it was important for me. I even thought about inventing ancestors in the United States to justify my attachment to the custom. My in-laws finally suggested that we could exchange vows at the start of the meal, after the toasts. The day of the wedding, everything seemed to be going smoothly. The dress, the weather, my skin. As planned, the guests gave their speeches before the dinner, blending humor and sincerity, a must for such an occasion. Then came the exchange of vows. My husband grabbed the microphone, thanked our loved ones for being there, said a word for those who couldn't be there with us that night. Then he turned to me.
It was important for my wife that we take the time to share our joy at being together, to speak these words aloud in front of our loved ones. So that's what I'll do. I love you, my wife. I will always love you. I am the happiest man to have met the most beautiful woman in the world.
Applause. Tears in our parents' eyes. In my hand, the vows I had spent months writing. My husband handed me the microphone, but I didn't unfold the paper crumpled between my fingers. He had only said a few words. It would have been ridiculous for me to read my speech, which was 7 minutes long. I had practiced and timed it. So I thanked the guests for coming once more, and I told my husband much too solemnly that I was happy to be his wife and that I would always love him. I was frozen to the spot, unable to say anything about the beauty of our meeting 2 years prior, of our endless conversations on cafe terraces in the months that followed, of the night when we danced between boxes in the apartment we had just moved into. I am the happiest man to have met the most beautiful woman in the world. I would have appreciated not being reduced to my physical appearance and instead complimented on my personality or the sharpness of my intellect. Everyone knows that beauty doesn't last a lifetime, unlike the bonds of marriage. I love you, my wife. I will always love you. Simplicity and reserve. Those two words suit him well. And thus, so did his vows, if we can even call them vows. Simplicity and reserve are fine, but I had dreamed of gravitas and effusiveness. At that moment, I thought to myself that perhaps he was too young and immature to get married. If he couldn't express the profound reasons for his love for me, perhaps it was because he had not yet identified them. He found me beautiful and kind. Was that enough for him? And so he hadn't looked any further, hadn't asked himself the question? I love you, my wife. I will always love you. A lovely line, but a bit flimsy for a lifelong pledge. I seriously wondered whether he had grasped the level of commitment he had just taken in marrying me.